Hi there, it's Hamish McDonald. If you think the world is a bit of a hot mess right now, you should meet my podcasting co-host, Geraldine Doogue.
Look, I do my very best to keep him under control. Together, we host Global Roaming, the Radio National show that does try to make sense of a changing world.
Every week, we analyse the big global events, the things that are shifting and changing in our world right now, from presidents to frontline reports.
And we try not to panic.
What are you talking about, Jerry? Search for Global Roaming. Hear it now on the ABC Listen app.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a great day for us all.
In 1945, the United Nations was a symbol of hope. But today, between two major conflicts and world leaders like Netanyahu, Putin and Trump basically ignoring what the UN says, many are questioning whether the organization's still relevant. So is the UN facing a crisis, and how might we fix it? I'm Siobhan Marin. This is Quick Smart, the show that feeds you big ideas in bite-sized pieces. What does the UN actually do? Why is its funding model on thin ice? And is there a better system to hold leaders in check? Someone who's been on a mission to find the answers is host of the Future Tense podcast, Anthony Fennell. Hey, Anthony.
Thanks for having me.
So the UN has been copying a lot of criticism lately. How different is this organization now, both in terms of its power and its international significance, compared to when it was created?
Look, I think people always talk about the UN being in a stage of crisis. It's always facing criticism from various countries, members, various blocs within the Security Council itself and within the General Assembly. But really, when you look around the world at the moment with the issues in the Middle East, with the issues in Russia, Ukraine, it really does feel, I think, to a lot of people, and certainly to a lot of analysts, that the UN's prestige, its power, has really been diminished in the last couple of years. On top of that, it's got significant budget issues, like very significant budget issues, which have forced a internal reform program within the UN. And then over the top of all of that, it's got, of course, Donald Trump, America first, unilateralism, and let's face it, the American right's hatred of the UN for decades, not just years, decades.
What does the UN actually do?
So the UN is compiled of two parts. There's a General Assembly, which is what you often see on the TV. This is where debates happen. So there's 193 member states. Everybody has representatives there, and they discuss issues and vote on issues. And it's really the place where argumentation, discussion, and alliances are formed. So that's the General Assembly. As part of that General Assembly, then, there's a Security Council, which is almost like the executive of the General Assembly. On that Security Council are five permanent members. And they are the victors from World War II, basically. So you've got the US, the UK, Russia, France, and China. And they took those positions when the UN was formed back in 1945, 80 years ago this year. And they hold a lot of power. And they also have a veto over all decisions that happen within the General Assembly. So that's one side of the UN. The other side of the UN is the Secretariat, the UN Secretariat. That's headed by the Secretary General, who's appointed by the UN's General Assembly. But the Secretariat is really the day-to-day bureaucracy of the United Nations. So it deals with policy, it deals with operations, it runs, for instance, the World Food Programme, all of the peacekeeping operations that happen. So it's vital in terms of meeting the need for UN operations around the world.
So how is this funded exactly?
There are what are called assessed contributions, and they're voluntary contributions. So a country can just decide, look, I really like what the World Food Programme is doing. I want to help them do a bit more, say, in the area of vaccines. We're going to give them another $16 million. You know, that's a voluntary contribution. But every member state is assessed for a regular duty that they have to pay to the United Nations each year. And just to give you an example, Australia pays about $70 million a year. There are a lot of countries who are very small, very poor, who don't contribute a lot. We're a middle-ranking power. Canada's around about 85 or 89. Germany's around about 200 million, you know, stepping up again. And then there are two players who are crucial in terms of UN funding. That's the United States and China. The United States is the biggest contributor. In a lot of ways, people would say, you know, the UN was really the United States idea, even though it's long had a frosty and at times difficult relationship with the United States. It still accounts for around about a quarter of all UN funding. And now China accounts for around about 15% at the moment because it's the second biggest economy in the world. Both serious contributors. Without their contributions, the UN simply wouldn't be able to exist in the form that it's in today. Mm. Now, the problem is that for the last couple of years, the United States has been very late in paying and has threatened not to pay its contributions, and China has been also very late in paying. To give you an example of that, Australia, we paid our $70 million in January this year, according to the UN. That's about the time that most countries would pay. As of the 24th of July this year, the US and China are both yet to make their payment to the United Nations. So the United Nations has been running now for, that's 6 months, basically, without the support, the financial support of their two biggest contributors. And this has been happening for several years.
Mm. The US has threatened to pull out of the UN. What would that do to the organisation, but also to US accountability?
What it would do to the organisation, analysts are very clear on this. I spoke to four leading analysts who follow the UN, you know, on a regular basis. It's their job, from different organisations, and they say it will change it completely. It will have to downsize. In anticipation of that, the UN Secretary General has already announced a series of cuts to funding and staffing within, as part of what he calls a reform package within the UN. Most analysts see that as an attempt by the Secretary General to kind of preempt America pulling back on its funding with the hope that America won't withdraw completely. There is prestige for the United States in having a leading position in the United Nations. Prestige also in being one of the five security members. We all know that Donald Trump likes prestige. He likes to be seen as somebody who's in charge. But it should be noted that already the Trump administration it's withdrawn from the World Health Organization. It's announced it's in the process of withdrawing from the UN Human Rights Council. It's withdrawn from UNESCO. It's still refusing, always has refused, to recognize the power of the International Criminal Court.
Going forward, what are some of the options that have been pitched for how the UN might be improved?
There is one person I spoke to, Roland Rich, who's at Rutgers University in the United States. He's a former Australian ambassador, by the way, and he's done a lot of work, written books on the UN. He actually argues that we need to rethink the whole structure of the UN, and he's thinking big. He thinks we need three general assemblies, not one. One for what he calls the representatives of civil society, one for business, and the traditional one with representatives of government. When I spoke to him, he admitted it's basically a pipe dream. But he said, we've got to start thinking at these kind of bigger levels about the United Nations. And I think what he's talking about is rethinking what's the value of the United Nations in the modern world. What do we want it to do? And it's 80 years old. It was very much a creature coming out of the Second World War. And it had priorities that were set in the international context in 1945. So it's not unreasonable to think, okay, we should talk about what we want from the UN. When the UN was formed, it was really the only player. But now we have things like ASEAN, we have the BRICS conglomerate of countries. All of those kind of, the roles that those organisations play now were once covered by the UN and organisations like the IMF and the World Bank, both of which were products of the American post-war restructure of the world.
Mm. What's at stake if the UN does fall apart?
There is no other organisation in the world that gives a voice to so many countries. And we often take that for granted, but it's a very crucial thing. You know, a small country with very few resources, with very little economic and political power, it can still command an audience at the United Nations. It can still, through its representatives, let other countries know what plight it's in or what it feels. And in a world in which there is so much division, there is so much self-interest, and there's a push towards unilateralism, again, I think many analysts would say the United Nations, for all its flaws, allows for a kind of cooperation in terms of the way it operates. Imagine what it would have been like going into the pandemic without the World Health Organization and without the UN. You know, again, think of, you know, there are a lot of people starving in the world. There are lots of problems with humanitarian aid. Imagine how much worse that they would be without the UN agencies there coordinating in the countries that they are able to operate in. So I think it's easy to underestimate the value that the United Nations provides to the world, even though many people concede, you know, it is now a flawed organization, and at 80 years needs to really rethink where it's going to go and how it will be reformed.
And also, does its existence hold some of our current very controversial world leaders in check?
Look, it does. It does hold them in check. That's one of the reasons that Donald Trump would have for pulling out of the UN. Of course, if he does do that, the UN is still going to exist in one shape or form without him for some time. And it will become much easier to criticise the United States than it is at the moment. At the moment, because it's a permanent five member of the Security Council, the United States has a veto. That wouldn't be the case if they left. And there is still a pressure put on countries simply by having to argue their case before the General Assembly, argue why they've taken the path that they've taken.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the program and laying it all out for us, Anthony.
Thank you very much for your time.
QuickSmart was recorded on the lands of the Gadigal people. If you like this episode, send it to a friend. You might also enjoy our previous chat, How Long Can Trump Keep Ignoring the Law? And for more about the significance of recognising a Palestinian state, check out the Law Report on the ABC Listen app. We'll put those links plus Anthony's podcast, Future Tense, in our show notes. Thanks to my producer, Jesse Kay. And if you have any feedback or ideas for how you think the UN should be changed, drop us a line at quick.smart@abc.net.au.